Right now, it is time once again to talk with Thorin Christendottir from Main Street Magazine. You can find Main Street Magazine, of course, free pickup throughout the tri-state region and also their website, mainstreetmag.com. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning. How are you?
Can't complain, except, you know, I get in this morning and all it takes, I don't know if you're like me or not, but I have my morning scheduled so compartmentalized that everything flows, and if one thing gets out of whack, you get behind for the whole morning. And I walked in this morning, and the one thing that was out of whack was our computers. All went through an update.
Updates are real good.
And we have four computers in the main studio, so I had to update all the computers. But anyways, I'm fine now. Anyway, something we didn't talk about last week, and I want to talk about to start off this week. You're on your website. You've got two great stories. One, of course, on the death of Butch Anderson. The Dutchess County Sheriff. Most people can't remember who was sheriff before Butch. That's how long Butch was sheriff. And you also have a good story retail people, because in Connecticut we always have tax-free weeks here and there. But Dutchess County is going to propose the elimination of the sales tax on clothing and footwear purchases coming up in 2022. That, over the course of a year, will save families a lot of money.
It certainly does. I mean, some people even drive over to Massachusetts across the border, because there's no tax on up to a certain amount on clothing and food. So I think that would, certainly have a huge impact on the folks who shop in Dutchess County, and would, it may not seem like a lot, one-off thing, but, you add it up over the year, especially with a family of multiple people and kids, the way they grow through shoes, it certainly would add up after a while.
Yeah, so it's great for people, but it's also good for the retailers, which are right along the Connecticut border in Millerton and Amenia, and you go up. So it's a win-win for everybody, and hopefully it'll hold. There won't be anything that'll prevent it. We'll get back to a more regional thing, and that is the story that I want to go talk about again by Peter Vermilia, I think it is, on the birth of how the National Park System was formed.
Yeah, I had talked to actually Ian Strever about doing a similar piece when we were planning this history issue, the October issue, because Ian had traveled over the summer to one of the national parks, I think out in Montana, if I'm not mistaken. But he actually said that I should talk to Pete about doing the article, because Pete had a little more information about it. And the angle that Pete took with it was going to the very origins of the national park system. For the average person knowing a little bit about the national parks, much like I was before I had the article, I really enjoyed personally how he approached the article and it went from, start to finish kind of with it, if we can use that terminology. But I thought it would be interesting to have a piece on the national parks, for the fact that there certainly are a number of them in our region. But the bigger picture is how they have impacted this country as a whole, and not just impacted us in our area locally. So I thought it was an important piece to have. And obviously the imagery is always beautiful from the various national parks. But the story behind it is, I think, quite fascinating, so I hope people really enjoy it and learn something from it and appreciate the national parks a little more.
Now, the next story that we'll talk about is intriguing because for years I worked in New York State, in Kingston, New York. I worked in Poughkeepsie and radio. And I am very familiar, and my dad, when we were kids, we used to always go into New York State because he appeared at the Concord in Kiamisha Lake, New York. And people don't realize how isolated the Hudson River made communities that were basically connected via the river in New York State. And you have a terrific article that has the most fantastic pictures of the New York State Bridge Authority and the different bridges and the different phases of construction. If you are somebody that likes history and travels in the area, you don't realize how many bridges there are between New York State and in New York State between the different counties. When you travel from New York City right on up to Albany, it's absolute. And in the Mid-Hudson Valley, there's just a whole bunch of bridges. And that does link communities and make communities much closer than they used to be.
they always get hyphenated after that, you know, like, you know, Hudson Catskill and whatnot. But Catherine Burke, who wrote this article for me, is quite the expert. She's actually published a book on them. And she's the one who has all these amazing photographs. And I'm so grateful to her for having shared the story with us and with our readers and the importance of the bridges. Just like you said, you don't think of it in those regards until, you know, you read it in these terms, that the fact that, you know, they were communities were basically, you know, disconnected from the other side, and, you know, the other side of the river may be, you know, just a mile or so away, but they felt like hundreds of miles because they couldn't reach them. So the importance of the bridges and how they came about being built and why they were built where they were, I found to be also fascinating. And I think it was the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge, the fact that they had moved it a few miles because of better positioning or something, you know, when they were planning it, and then how one bridge sparked another community's desire to have a bridge of their own to connect those communities, and what that meant for commerce, for transportation, for connectivity is just amazing to see.
You know, it's funny, I always tell this story when I talk about the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge. I started working in Kingston. I still lived at my mother's house in Sharon, and I would travel over. I worked midnights, and so I would travel over. I would leave about 10 o'clock so I could get to Kingston by 11. And going over the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge, I think I was working at the radio station for about a month, I got a flat tire as I got on the bridge. And so I was about halfway across the bridge. And so I was walking on the bridge at 11 o'clock at night, heading towards the toll booth so I could get some help, because there wasn't cell phones at that time. Right. And all of a sudden, state police cars and other cars came racing up to stop me. They thought I was going to jump off the bridge.
Oh, geez.
That was my real induction to the Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge. It all turned out well for the state police and the bridge authority in Marshall Miles, by the way. I will remember that to the day I die. I couldn't understand why they were all closing in on me. But anyway, you've got another story in the Hudson Valley, America's oldest winery.
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
But we have the oldest winery in the Hudson Valley here. Dominique, who is our expert vintner, was the owner who pitched me the story and brought it to my attention. So I was happy to learn about it. But she, you know, wrote a beautiful piece here and about telling the story of this winery and how it's gone through, you know, a couple of different owners and how and why that is, and about their products and how they've come about, like on the first page of the article, the hashtag Bay Riesling that they have, and keeping up with the times. And so it's not, you know, with having their unique wine cellars that are, I think, some of the most unique in this country, to their most, can we say, modern iterations of their products and everything in between. And folks can take a tour there, and I for one can't wait to go get a bottle and try it after reading this article.
Yeah, it blew me away, and I thought I knew a lot. I couldn't believe that America's oldest winery came out of the Hudson Valley in New York. Because once again, this is an article based on history, and if ever you want to take a look at the magazine or read the website, and you're new to this area, do this, because it'll give you really an understanding of what the Hudson Valley is about and how it developed over the years. It's very, 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 very interesting. So now I want to talk just a second or two. This is a history edition. Once again, explain to people how you pick what you're going to do each month and how you put it together.
Well, when we first started in 2013, there was no theme to each issue. It was just kind of, you know, stories that we thought of or things that were happening that were pertinent. And I think in just after our first year anniversary, it was suggested that we do, you know, a food and drink issue. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And it kind of just grew from there. And just last week, we were planning 2022, which we always do around this year. And so we were going through our themes. And we've kind of, I think it's about five, you know, months or themes that we have that are just stuck now, you know, because people love them and it's a great theme. You know, like July is our food and drink issue. March is our animal and farming issue. But we've kind of picked these things. Some of it happened organically, but it ties into a broader umbrella of a theme that, you know, it relates to things around here, or, you know, as a subject matter that's interesting and important. And we, you know, it's not exclusive. Like, our November issues always are our art and design issue, but we have such a broad stroke that we've painted with it. It's not just like, oh, fine artists, but we go into performing arts, we go into architecture, graphic design, and, you know, anything that falls under, in our opinion, under that umbrella. And so we're able to, you know, seek out stories that fit that mold, if you will, but it's also highlighting a specific thing in our area or topic in our area that we feel is interesting, and we think our readers will hopefully find it interesting as well.
Well, it's a great magazine on a regular basis to understand what goes on in this area. But again, this month's issue, I just think that if you live in an area, when I moved to Kingston, I studied up all about the history of Kingston when I was working in radio there. And if you've just moved into the area, this magazine will give you a great insight to how the Hudson Valley is and what it was. Same thing for Northwest Connecticut. So great job. And I always love when you can learn and not feel like you're learning.
Right. That's always the goal.
I mean, we had teachers in high school that tried to do that all the time. They tried to make the class seem like you weren't in school, but you were learning things. That's Main Street Magazine on the web, mainstreetmag.com. And, of course, free pickup throughout the tri-state region. Thorne, we'll speak to you again next week.
Sounds terrific. Thanks, Marshall.
Take care. Thorne Christendotter and Main Street Magazine here on Robin Hood Radio. Once again, you can find them at mainstreetmag.com.